of us to see. The mountains, lakes, and rivers, the wildlife and the woods are just outside your way. So get outside and find it in the Maine outdoors. Fishing and hunting, winter, spring, summer, and fall. If it happens in the Maine outdoors, they talk about it all. Just tune in your radio to 103.9. Jim and Paul and Bob and Matt are your outdoors hotline. Each Sunday night at 7 on WVOM. To find out what is happening, just listen to the radio to the Maine outdoors.
Welcome to the Maine outdoors. Here's tonight's host, V. Paul Reynolds.
Yeah, thank you, and good evening, one and all. And we're so glad to have you on our program tonight, the Maine Outdoors, Maine's longest-running outdoor talk radio program. We are totally, utterly dedicated to hunting and fishing and everything about the great outdoors, and we welcome you to join us on the program tonight. If you'd like to be on our program, the number to call is
1-800-966-1039. And if you're local, you got to dial the whole number.
You bet. And you're listening to us on WVOM 101.3 and 103.9 down in Rockland and 1450 AM.
Right.
Did I get that right, Norm?
You did.
Okay. We're going to introduce our special guests in the studio in just a moment, but first the crew who make the show possible week after week. Our engineer behind the special glass in Studio B, behind all the gauges and dials in there, Mr. Norm Plohr. Take a bow, Norm.
Good evening. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. How was your fishing?
Oh, it was really good. Good trip. Not a whole lot of fish, but it was a lot of fun, and I lost a big one.
Good eat.
We're going to find out about that during the fishing report. And with
Sounds
Norm,
like a big bummer.
And with Norm is our Kenny Rogers look-alike, Mr. Scotty Bates. Take a bow, Scotty.
Yes, good evening, Paul, and good evening, everybody out there. And it's a beautiful day.
You bet. And with us in the studio tonight, we have Alice Lehman, Bob's bride Alice, and beside Alice, my great-grandson, Davin. Davin, welcome to Maine Outdoors.
Thank you.
A man of many words.
Yes.
And our esteemed co-host, who's a registered master Maine guide, he's written all kinds of great books on fishing, Mr. Trout himself, Robert F. Lehman.
I appreciate it. Thank you so much.
And you notice we have the same look-alike shirts on
tonight. Yeah, I see that. Yeah.
Great minds think alike. Yeah.
Yeah, twins.
You bet. Our guest tonight, we've been trying to get him on here for quite a while now, and we're so glad to have him with us finally. He is the new deer biologist for the state of Maine, the research biologist, and he's been on the job about a year now, I think. I'd like to introduce to you our special guest tonight, Nathan Bieber. Welcome to our show, Nathan.
Thanks for having me, Paul.
Nice to have you. How long have you been on the job now?
Well, I started at the very, very end of August this past fall, so that's about 9 or 10 months. Well, I did take a month off for my wedding and honeymoon. So
you're not supposed to do that.
9 months, maybe. But
you took a whole week off?
It was more than that.
Oh, a month. Your honeymoon. Okay. All right. Well, we'll talk about that, too, if you want, a little later.
Sure.
Okay. Nice to have you with us, and we're looking forward. If you're at home, if you have any questions related to the white-tailed deer in the state of Maine, we're going to talk about any deer permits. We're going to talk about winter severity indexes, talk about anything related to the white-tailed deer. And if you have a question to pop, he's the man to talk to. Nathan Bieber. We'll be talking to Nathan momentarily. Right now, though, it's time for Outdoor Digest, brought to you by the Northwood Sporting Journal, Bob Lehman's favorite outdoor publication.
It certainly is.
As well as Maine Outdoor Publications.
Yes.
Let's see. Applications for any deer permits. I've had a couple of people call in and question when exactly that begins. I'm not positive, but I'm pretty sure it starts July 1st. I know they're not available right now online, but they will be, I think, the 1st of July. And we're going to talk about any deer permits. They've been increased this year, and we're going to discuss that with Nathan Bieber in just a minute. VZ Salmon Club is having a big fish fry on July 28th, and this is going to be quite a hoedown. They're going to have a fish fry with homemade French fries and salads and prizes and all kinds of good things. And Bob Wunjenik, who's a new director there for the VZ Salmon Club, will be on our program between now and July 28th to fill you in about that, but you might want to put that on your dance card. Should be a good time.
Is this a fundraiser? Or?
Sounds good.
Yeah, I think it is maybe partially a fundraiser for the VZ Club. Yep. And I think right now it's time for Bob's Lehman's favorite music.
I'm the big boss bass.
Yeah.
And you work for me.
Yeah.
This is my rock.
Yeah.
These are my reeds.
All right. Yeah. Fishing is just getting better and better everywhere I look, Bob. Oh, what's going on out there in the fishing world?
I'm going to ask you a question, if you don't mind, sir.
Sure.
I put my canoe in the other day with my son Bobby and sat it up one of my secret places, and I ran into guess who? V. Paul and his son Scotty, and they had fished all our hot spots out through there, and they caught all kinds of trout, according to your wife.
We did.
Who told me this morning after church. You did, yeah. You got some nice fish.
And you know, we were on the stream, and Scotty has better hearing than yours truly. And he said, you know, that sounds like Bob Lehman. And I said, well, he's bringing up the rear, and I'm glad to hear that.
Yeah. Well, it was funny because my son Bobby said the same thing. I hear voices, Dad. I said, oh, no. But it turned out to be you. But that's all right. We went downriver.
How'd you do downriver?
And we did really quite good. I mean, we got some nice fish, and I heard you got some nice fish, so we were both happy.
Oh, that's good. As long as everybody had a good time.
Oh, yeah. And then you went to West Branch, I understand, you and Di.
Yeah, we spent 5 days.
And Di caught all the fish up there, 5-1, she outfished you.
She did, absolutely outfished me 5-1. She had a little number 16 parachute Adams, which was a hot fly. Yeah. And that was the only one she had, and I didn't have any. So she kind of monopolized the fishing situation.
Wow. Wow, and a nice big trout she said she caught, and she ate it.
Yeah, we caught two trout. She caught two, and we ate them both. Yeah,
wow, that's great.
Yeah. A lot of bugs on the water up there, too. Yeah. Great hatches.
No hex hatch, sure, yet, huh?
No hex hatch.
But you know, I was going to tell you, Paul, Bobby and I saw a hex hatch where we were.
Did you?
But it was late in the day. We were there at almost dusk, and they started hatching.
Yeah.
It wasn't a tremendous hatch, but it was they were starting, coming across, and they were gobbling them, too.
Getting close to that time.
Yeah, and this is like 2 weeks ago, right?
Wow.
So they must be in full swing, Central Maine, anyway.
Yeah. And on the river up there, on the West Branch, the blue-winged olives, March browns, and a bunch of caddisflies.
Yeah, really small, number 16, 18 caddis, a little gray caddis.
Yeah, a little gray caddis,
Yeah. Well, and also I understand that you took your great-grandson fishing down to Branch Lake. And what's the story on that?
Well, let him tell you. We went went trolling, didn't we, Davin?
Yep.
And you were doing all the fishing. I was running the outboard, and you were dragging. What were you using for lure? Was that orange thing? What was that?
Orange fish.
I think it's called a mooslick, isn't it?
Yep.
Mooslick what? Wobbler. And did you catch any fish, Davin?
Yep.
Well, what did you catch?
Like five.
Five fish? And were they bass or white perch? What were they?
Bass and sunfish, I think.
Bass and sunfish. Now, you didn't have any fun, right?
Of course you know that's not true.
Well, I finally got you to say more than one word. That's good. Anyway, Davin, you're a great guy to fish with, and we're going to do a lot more of that. Before you head home, you can be sure, okay? And the fish are going to get bigger and bigger, buddy. I promise you that.
Yes.
All right. Okay. What's going on? What else is going on in the fishing world?
We're waiting for that hex hatch, Paul. That's what we're waiting for. And I'll probably be trying them again right off in one of my secret spots, if you don't get there ahead of me.
Okay, Nathan, do you know what the Latin word is for the hex bug?
I know not a word of Latin, Bob. Oh,
I thought you studied that, you biologist. You don't study Latin?
No, afraid not.
All right.
Hexagenia limbata.
Hexagenia limbata.
Oh, that was my guess.
And Bob and I have had an ongoing dispute now for 20 years whether that bug is actually Hexagenia limbata or an ephemerata, right?
I was going to say gardenia or whatever it is.
Gardenia, Anyway.
And you asked me the other, last week, was it, or 2 weeks ago, about trichops?
Yeah.
And they've pretty much thinned out right now, but that's Trichoptera.
Okay.
You knew that anyway.
I heard of that, yeah.
Yeah, right.
Okay. Now, Norm Plord, I mean, you spent all that money and went to Quebec. You must have a fish story to tell.
The fish that got away.
What happened?
Oh, I had this fish on, and I knew it was big, and reeling him towards the boat, and I had him within sight, and I said, and I asked my partner to... Can you net the fish for me? And I didn't pay attention to the fact that he had his chain with a fish or two dangling on the side of the boat. And as I brought the fish in, he missed on the initial attempt or two of getting the fish, and then the fish got hung up in the chain.
He bungled the netting job?
Well, the fish got off because it got hung up in the chain that was dangling on the side of the boat with a couple fish on it.
Oh.
Now, that's how it came off. And then and then what was interesting is about, I think it was the following evening, I netted a 2.5-pounder for him.
Have you ever had a friend man the net and mess things up by hitting the fish in the head with the end of the side of the net instead of netting it?
Have
you ever had that happen?
I had that, and I think I might have done it to somebody, too, in the past.
Yeah. Don't you? You feel bad when that happens, right?
Yes, it's not a good feeling, especially when you're looking at a 2.5 to 3-pound brookie that you don't take and you don't catch too often.
But you had fun?
I had a blast.
You ate well?
Oh, excellent, excellent. The place is really, really good.
Yeah, what was the best meal you had up there?
Oh, God. It's hard to pick one because there were so many of them. But there was one that we didn't expect. This is my third year of going there, and we had ribs. And it was extremely well done.
Yeah, sounds good. Yeah. All right, Quebec's a great place to fish.
It really is.
Bob and I both fished up there.
Yes, we have.
And it's all speckled trout. It's all brookies. All brookies.
Yeah, yeah.
And you know that this dangling fish with a chain on the side of the boat is illegal in Maine.
Yeah.
Apparently not in Quebec.
Yeah. No, not a problem that I can tell. And nobody told us differently. So.
Got to catch them to dangle them, though, haven't you?
Okay, to wrap up our fishing report, is that about it?
That's it.
Davin, do you know how to tell if a fisherman is lying?
Not really.
You can see his lips move.
Yeah.
Okay. That wraps up the fishing report.
Think of us with that, too. Are all fishermen liars, or do only liars fish?
That's a good question. Yeah. That's the fishing report for tonight. And again, our guest in the studio, if you joined us late, is Nathan Bieber. Nathan is the head of the he's a deer biologist. What is the correct title for that? I had to get that straight.
Deer biologist, deer specialist.
Specialist.
Interchangeable.
Yeah. Okay. But you're in the research branch there, right?
That's correct. Yeah. Research and assessment.
All right. We'll be talking to Nathan, and if you have a question, we invite you to call. And the toll-free number, if you care to dial and be on our program tonight, is
1-800-966-1039, and dial the whole number, even if you're local.
Okay. Right now, we're going to have an outdoor trivia question, and if you have the right answer, I'm going to make sure you get a print of one of my watercolor paintings of a Maine moose. And I think Mr. Bieber has the question.
That I do. This evening's question is, in whitewater rafting, what is a hydraulic? A hydraulic. What in whitewater rafting, what is a hydraulic?
All right, you ponder that, and we'll be right back. Okay, we're back with Maine Outdoors, and our studio guest, the deer biologist for the state of Maine, Nathan Bieber. We'll be talking to Nathan momentarily. Right now, we have to dispose of the trivia question. Nathan is going to judge the veracity of your answer. We want you to tell us what is meant in whitewater rafting terminology of a hydraulic.
And you have a caller.
And we have a caller. Good evening, caller. Welcome to Maine Outdoors.
Hello.
Hello.
Yeah, on the hydraulic, that's amount of water coming down through.
It's a what?
The amount of water that's released from the dams that comes down through, that you go through.
Okay, well, I don't know. What do you think about that, Judge Bieber?
I don't think that quite matches what we're looking for here.
Okay, that's a good guess. What's your name, sir?
Rudy Killen.
Okay, Rudy, where are you calling us from tonight?
From Mechanic Falls of Maine.
Oh, that's over there near Rumford, right?
Not really. We're a lot south, closer to Lewiston, Auburn.
Oh, that's right, sure, near Lewiston. Are you a fisherman?
Very little.
Very little. Okay. Are you a hunter?
A little.
Okay. Do you like the outdoors?
The big thing is, if I mean to do much hunting and fishing, I'm blind.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that. I'm sorry to hear that. Well, at least you're listening to our program, and we appreciate that, sir.
Why don't we give him a prize anyway for calling in? I'd love to sell him a fly, send him
a
fly.
I tell you what, we're going to continue with the trivia question, but Bob Lehman wants to send you a fly, okay?
Okay.
All right. So what we'll do, if you stay on hold after the show, Norm will get your mailing address, and Bob will send you one of his highly valued hand-tied fishing flies, okay?
Okay.
And it's so pretty, you don't even have to fish with it. You can frame it and put it up in your house.
There we go.
Okay. Thanks for calling in. We appreciate it. And hang on the line there, okay?
Okay.
All right. Thank you.
You've got another caller.
All right. Another caller. Good evening, caller. You're on Maine Outdoors. We're looking for an answer to the trivia question.
Yes.
What's your name?
Dan Orono.
Okay, Dan, what do you think the answer is, sir?
Well, the hydraulic is kind of like a depression, and it's a swirl, if you will, that catches the raft or the boat, and it's a down and it's an up all at once.
Okay. Would you have fun if you were caught in one?
No, you'd be pretty well locked in. It's hard as hang to get out.
Yeah, dangerous, aren't they?
Yeah, it is.
You bet.
It is. Up your boat. And, I mean, what it will do to a boat is not pretty.
No. Judge Bieber, does he have the answer?
That was a very well-answered question. Well done.
Yeah, he would get an A-plus if this were school, right?
Most definitely.
Well, yeah.
Good answer.
Well done, Dan.
Good job, Dan. Dan, if you unless you have any other comments, we're going to put you on hold, and Engineer Norm will get your mailing address, and I'll make sure you get one of my watercolor prints of a Maine moose, okay?
Oh, my gosh.
And you're the first person to receive one of these, so I hope you enjoy it, and I hope you spend a few bucks to get it framed and matted, okay?
Well, that's nice.
I'm going to send you a print. It's on nice archival paper, so it'll last, and I'm going to put it in the mail to you once we get your address, okay?
Yes, that's nice. Thank you, sir.
All right, Dan. Thank you, and thanks for playing the game, and thanks for listening. Stay on the line, Dan. Okay, that was the correct answer, hydraulic. And Bob Lehman mentioned another word for it would be a whirlpool, right?
Absolutely, yeah. Whirlpool, yeah. I've seen the guys caught in that.
Water just spins around.
Comes over a set of falls and whirls around, and boy, you get one of them in a kayak, and you can be in a lot of trouble.
Get trapped there, right?
Yes, sir, yeah. Absolutely.
You'd be drowned.
Yeah, you bet.
That's absolutely, yeah. That's right, yeah. David.
Okay, let's get down to business here and cut to the chase. Again, good to have you with us here tonight, Nathan.
Thank you.
And before we start talking about one of my favorite subjects, and I'm sure one of yours, the white-tailed deer, tell our listeners a little bit about your background and how you happened to wind up here in Maine being a deer biologist.
Gladly, Paul. So my name's Nathan Bieber. I came from, well, I would have called Minnesota home before this, but I was in graduate school immediately prior to this in Nebraska. And before that, going back in time, I spent about 4.5 years doing various field research projects and different positions all around the country, working with as many different species as I could get my hands on, just trying to learn new techniques and new research methods. So I worked with wolves and deer and different fur bearers and woodcock and prairie chickens, just all kinds of stuff like that. And then kind of all started in my undergrad in Minnesota at the University of Minnesota in the Twin Cities. I would say I got into the outdoors mostly after my family in Wisconsin. They bought a piece of land not too far from Aldo Leopold's Sand County Shack, 120 acres, and they started hunting that in the late 80s, and I got the family interested in hunting, and eventually my dad joined the party, and then I got involved, and my interest in the outdoors kind of blossomed from there.
So you're Wisconsin born?
Most of my extended family's from Wisconsin. I never lived there myself, though. I did spend the summers and a lot of the holidays in Wisconsin.
So you grew up in Minnesota?
Mostly. I kind of bounced around the country. Most of my upbringing was in Minnesota, but also California and Indiana. And yeah. I was actually born in Newton, Massachusetts, but I was there only very briefly.
So you're a born New Englander then?
Technically, yes.
Yes. Right. Well, good to have you here.
Thank you.
And again, congratulations on your fairly new job. You haven't been in it a year yet. You're just getting your feet wet and learning all about the ropes. Let's talk a little bit about the overall state of the Maine deer population. I know we've had ups and downs. Northern Maine now has been struggling with deer numbers for quite a long time now because of the severe winters, I guess. But what's it look like right now? What's the profile of the Maine deer from Kittery to Fort Kent? Can you give us kind of a broad overview of what it looks like right now?
We continue to struggle in some parts of the north and down east where deer are at the mercy of the climate more so than in the central and southern parts of the state. But down here, we've rebounded nicely from some severe winters in the late 2000s, and we're in a good spot right now. We're seeing a lot of growth, and to the point now where we actually need to start trimming down numbers in some areas.
Yeah, and that northern Maine would not include that, right?
That's correct.
Have there been any, now, for a number of years now, there have been no doe permits issued whatever up in the northern wildlife management districts. Has that changed with this year's allocation at all?
We have, for the last couple of years, issued a very small number of permits in some of the northern districts. Our philosophy's changed a little bit on that, and we're to a point where we feel the herd can definitely sustain a minimal take, and we would like to provide hunters with the opportunity to potentially harvest the doe when they wouldn't otherwise be able to harvest the deer. So we have issued small numbers of permits in the north the last couple of years.
Looking at the past trend, population trends of deer, I'm trying to recall, maybe you can help clear this up, but there was a low point. I guess it was like, was it 4, 5, 6 years ago? We had a real low point in the deer numbers because we had a couple of very severe winters plus the coyote predation. Was it?
You'd have to go back a few more years than that, but you're in the right ballpark.
10 years ago?
Yeah, somewhere around 2008 and 2009, yeah. I think, were the bad winters.
Yeah, things were really quite grim deer-wise back then.
That's right.
But it's come around again. And what's the explanation, to your mind, of why the deer have rebounded since then?
We've generally had pretty mild winters since then, which has helped a lot for the northern deer, though this winter in the north was pretty severe. But down south, we have found that we've been under-harvesting does for quite a few years. We've had pretty mild winters, so deer are just doing pretty well.
Okay. We have a caller. Good evening, caller. You're on Maine Outdoors with deer biologist Nathan Bieber.
Hello.
Hello. This is Jim from Webster, Maine.
Hey, Jim.
Hey, Nathan. I live in an area, it's a wintering area for the deer, and I've been feeding them for 3 years.
Can you stay on the line, caller? We're going to have to take a commercial break here, but will you stay with us and we'll let you finish your question. Okay?
Okay.
Thank you. All right, we'll be right back here on Maine Outdoors. Okay, we're back with Maine Outdoors and our studio guest, deer biologist Nathan Bieber. You can turn that music down a little, engineer. Thank you.
Got caught up with something else.
All right. You're doing a great job. Do we have our caller still standing by?
Yes, sir.
And your first name again, sir?
I'm Jim from Webster.
Okay, Jim. Why don't you start your question all over again, Jim? Nathan is standing by to respond to you. Go ahead with your question.
Well, I've been feeding the deer for this coming winter. If I feed him, it'll be 4 years. And I've got a buck that's going to be, well, he is four. Been feeding him for 3 years. But my question is, a lot of people say that you shouldn't feed them, that it messes up their digestive system. But I've got the same deer coming back year after year after year. So I wanted to know what Nathan thought about the process of feeding the deer. Does it hurt them, or does it help them get through the cold winters?
In general, we don't encourage people to feed. But if you do it correctly, you can mitigate the potential harm it could do. A lot of people will put out feed very suddenly in, say, the middle of winter when they perceive that deer are struggling. They'll just lump food out on the landscape. And deer don't digest food like, say, people do. They rely on different microorganisms in their gut to help break down food, and it takes some time for them to transition between different types of food. So if you introduce something...
I don't understand that either, because I got 43 acres here, and they eat all my furs, all anything that's sticking up above the snow. They chew it down to nothing. Even though they're still eating the grain, they eat everything else too.
Yep.
So is it a good thing to feed them or no?
So the conifers that they're eating, they're already well adapted to digesting that kind of food, so that's not causing them any problems. The grain, however, okay, if you dump it all of a sudden at once and they get a stomach full of that and their gut's not adapted to digest that kind of food, it can cause a lot of problems. It can cause something called acidosis, where they're basically just not able to digest the food, and they have a buildup of different harmful off-putting things from the bacteria in their stomach that build up in their body, and they basically just die with a stomach full of food. And it can be dangerous to feed in that way. If you do it correctly, you can mitigate the risks. If you introduce feed very slowly and space it out on the landscape, start introducing food prior to the winter, you can mitigate some of those potential harms. And also if you spread it out on the landscape so you don't have one deer that's just coming around scarfing down the whole pile of food by itself, that can also help to mitigate some of those problems.
Yeah, they fight like crazy over it too. But I put out maybe 40 piles for 70 deer, it's killing me financially, so I'm retired, and
I just can't
afford to do it anymore. But somebody told me I was hurting the deer, so that's why I wanted to ask you. Okay. Well, I appreciate your help. Thank you, sir.
Are you, I almost don't dare to ask, but are you a deer hunter?
Going, I guess.
Oh, I guess he left us. Okay.
I think he hung up.
Yeah. There's one of the other reasons I remember when I worked for IF&W, Nathan, one of the other arguments against feeding is that when you feed deer, you bring them out so they get in proximity to traffic, being killed on the highways.
Yeah, there are a number of other concerns like that. A lot of people like to feed by their house, which is usually in close proximity to a road and increases the likelihood that they'll encounter vehicles. Yeah. That can be a problem.
And it would be make it easier for predators too, right?
If they get habituated to seeing deer in a place where they would normally be, that can certainly happen. Yeah. We also worry about deer being drawn away from natural yards into areas where they're receiving supplemental feed, and then the issue becomes, what if, as the caller said, it becomes too expensive and they pull that food? Where are those deer sitting at that point?
Yeah. Now, are they a ruminating animal?
That's correct.
Yeah, so, I mean, I've raised cattle before, and it's true. You cannot switch the feed too quickly. And if they get into grain, I had a steer get into grain one time, and it was not good. He was sick for a few days.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It's like if you feed a dog one brand of dog food and you change to a different brand of dog food, it can raise havoc.
But with the ruminant animal, though, it's even more noticeable. Yeah.
They have chambered stomachs, right?
Yes.
That's why.
Yeah.
And so I would recommend, if you do want to help and feed deer in the winter, the best way to do it would be providing the type of food that they're already getting. So if you have some branches that are maybe just out of reach on a cedar tree or a hemlock tree, if you could drop those, that would be a food they're already well adapted to eating, and that would help out a lot more than providing some food that they might not be able to handle.
Probably wouldn't be good to give them a pineapple ham pizza, anything like that.
I wouldn't recommend it, Paul.
No. Norm, I didn't know you were a cowboy.
Oh, I've raised cattle, sheep, pigs, and a few chickens running around the yard. Oh,
yeah. You're a man of many, many dimensions. Incredible.
What do they say? Jack of all trades, master of none?
Yeah. Well, you make a great chili. No, you've mastered the chili making.
Yes, that's so true.
Keep the jalapenos the heck out of it. It's not bad.
Yeah, right. That's right.
All right. That's good. Let's talk a little bit, Nathan, about the this always, I think, I'm a deer hunter, avid deer hunter, still am after all these years. And we all look to see what's going to happen with the any deer permits. We all like to get a buck, but, you know, if you don't get a buck, sometimes it's good to have a doe permit. And over the years, it's kind of like a roller coaster. It goes up and down. You never know exactly what's going to happen. What's the situation with the deer permits this year? What are we looking for?
So this year we're putting out just over 84,000 any deer permits, which will be a record number of any deer permits. The primary reason for that, though, we saw decreased numbers in actually a lot of the north and down east regions where winter was a little more severe and where we're a little more careful about doe harvest. But in some of central and southern Maine, we've started to see that some sex ratios are a little out of balance, where we're seeing 2.5 and 3 does per buck. And we're actually okay with that in a lot of the state where we're trying to grow the herd. But we're getting to a point in some of central and southern Maine where our strategy now is not to grow the herd anymore. It's to either stabilize or even reduce numbers in some areas. So in areas like that, if we're starting to see that there are still 2.5 and 3 does per buck on the landscape, we want to get those ratios down a bit. So in order to do that, we have to increase the ratio of does to bucks that we want to see in the harvest, which means we got to put out more permits to get to the doe harvest that we want to see.
So did I hear you right? Did you say this is a record number of any deer permits?
That's correct, Paul.
A record number. Why?
Yep.
And so it's a combination of, explained by a combination of high numbers in southern Maine and the, trying to adjust the sex ratio, right?
Yep, that's right.
Interesting. Wow. Okay, we have a caller. Let's take it. Good evening, caller. You're on Maine Outdoors with deer biologist Nathan Bieber.
Yeah, I got a few questions for him. The first one is he going to stay any longer than the rest of them have since the
That's a good question.
I've enjoyed my time in Maine so far, and I don't look to be leaving anytime soon, caller.
Now, he signed a contract with IF&W to do 100 years.
And the second one is, they're not big on feeding deer. Are they ever going to get serious on their winter deer areas, or just let them keep being cut and doing nothing about it?
Okay, that was an editorial, not a question, but it was a good point. This is Tommy, right?
No, it's Willie.
I mean Willie. How you doing, Willie?
Yeah. Oh, pretty good.
Good to hear you. Good to hear you call in. Good questions. Let's let Nathan.
Third
question. Okay, go ahead.
Third question is where he studied wolf. Where is his stance on that? On the reintroductions and stuff, would he be against that? Or what are we looking for on the stance on that?
Okay, let's start with the deer yard.
Thanks for your questions.
Start with the deer yard issue, Nathan. His comment, I think, is a good one. Basically, he's inferring that we're not managing our deer yards very well. And your response to that?
Yeah, deer yard management has been pretty tricky, and it's something that I don't think we have nailed down just yet, especially in it's interesting in parts of central and south Maine where we have historically kind of had this idea that we need to protect deer yards everywhere. We've kind of been doing that, and a lot of areas haven't responded as far as the deer population goes. So we're at an interesting point where if we want to continue protecting these areas, it's going to be a little more difficult, and we're going to have alternate strategies to do that. So something that's been brought up more and more is trying to market these not so much as, hey, this is a deer wintering area, we need to protect it, but rather look at it from a broader perspective on the landscape and look at what it offers to other species. There are a lot of other species that rely on similar habitats besides deer, and I think if we focus on that a little bit more, we might get more people interested in conserving deer yards and might have a better chance at protecting some of these areas.
One of the my recollection is that there is an ongoing attempt by IF&W to have cooperative deer yard agreements with some of these big timberland holders. Is that still an ongoing process, and how's that going?
These are always cooperative agreements. I don't think any of this is I'm not sure how much of this is mandatory, but a lot of these agreements are cooperative, and we would like the participation of the people who control the most land, which is usually the paper companies. So they're definitely someone that we want to get on board. But, yeah.
But it is, every time they have one is not mandatory, they just get one, and then 5 years of land sold, and the next company goes and does what they want.
Yeah.
It didn't mean anything.
Yeah. There was a time.
A lot of these deers come into town to feed.
Yep.
Traveled a long ways to find that food. So that's like they was traveling to find a place to be because there was no place to be where they was in the summer range.
And then you have the additional problem of now that they're coming to a town to feed, if there is a nearby deer wintering area that is, say, restored over the course of 50 years, are they going to return to that or just come into the town?
Why did they come from 40 miles in the last 20 years to town in the first place? Because there was no place to be.
Yeah, that's hard to say.
Yeah, good point. You know, there was a time when, there was a precise, I don't know if a precise is the right word, but there was an attempt to inventory all of the historic deer yards in Maine. Is there still, in your office, do you have an inventory of these larger, more well-established historic deer yards? Is that still?
We do have inventories. They're likely outdated in a lot of areas, but they do exist, and how they're applied, that varies, but I think it's something that could stand to be updated in the future. I think it's probably been a while since a lot of those things have been looked at, but it's very costly to do that. We're talking about a huge landscape issue, not just a small-scale issue, so that'd be an enormous undertaking.
Willie, do you personally know of any large established deer yards that have been wiped out by lumbering?
About everything from here north.
No, but do you know a specific deer yard? I know you're an outdoor guy. You get in the woods all year round.
It's pretty much just a few here and a few there trying to make it through. Ones don't come to town.
Yeah.
I mean, there's deer come for 30 miles, come into Brownville so they can eat.
Do you know any big deer yards near Brownville that have been wiped out by cutting?
Yeah, well, everything from there north, and that's why they're in town.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I think you make some strong points, and I know you're kind of putting Nathan on the hot seat a little bit, but it's a tough issue. I agree with you. I think
we've heard about it for 40 years, and 50
years,
and nothing ever changed.
Yeah, it doesn't seem like it from things I've heard. Anyway, appreciate the input, Willie.
I just want to hear about his stance on the wolves too, because I'm just hoping we don't have somebody that likes wolves.
Yeah, I don't think I'm not aware of any program. Is there a program right now to?
There's groups that want to introduce them. I just want to know his view on that.
Yeah. Okay. Nathan?
There's probably some small nonprofit groups and things and wolf enthusiast groups that are supportive of reintroducing them. I think it'd be a very tough sell in Maine, and it'd definitely be a hill I would not personally want to have to climb up. I'll stay down here on flat ground, I think.
Yeah. I don't think they'd have any luck pushing that after the issue we've had with coyotes for the last 20 years. But you never know. Things happen. Appreciate the call, Willie. Anything else on your mind?
No, that'll do it for now.
All right. You being a good boy?
Yeah.
Yep. Okay. Take care, Willie.
Have a good one, Willie.
Yep, bye-bye.
Will we have another caller?
Okay, before we take the caller, we'll ask the caller to be patient and stand on because it's way past the time where we're supposed to make a buck here for this program.
2 minutes.
So stand by, caller. We're going to let you put your question to Nathan Bieber right after we remind everybody that this program is sponsored in part every week by
General Appliance in Varroa.
And they have a complete line of new and used gas ranges, refrigerators, and freezers, as well as compost toilets. And they're located, where are they, Bob, if you want to try to find General
Appliance? Well, if you come across the old bridge in Brewer, you grab a right and a left, and you're right on Center Street. And they got practically the whole block there on the right. You can't miss them. It used to be Perkins Appliance, but now it's General Appliance. Okay. And it's run by a good friend.
Al Elkin.
Al Elkin, right. Great guy.
Is he a good man or what?
He knows his stuff. I mean, he can repair anything.
Yeah. And he's a nice guy, and I love his engineer's cap that he wears. I wanted to buy it from him, but I didn't dare to ask him. Right?
Wonder what he does when it wears out. I mean, where does he find his other one?
Anyway, General Appliance and Brewer, they install everything they sell. They stand behind their products. The prices are fair, and they're just good folks to do business with. We recommend them highly. Bob and Jim and I and Scotty and Jim all, this is no lie. This is the truth. This is not just a commercial. We patronize them,
yes,
we do. Don't we?
Yes,
we do.
You betcha. So check them out, and their telephone number, if you want to give them a call, if you've got a question about a possible appliance you're interested in buying, give them a buzz at 989-3714, General Appliance in Brewer.
And they sell compost toilets over there, and Norm says...
Ride the wave, baby.
Right. All right. And they also sell our books over there,
They
Paul.
Do. They do
your
sell
books
our books.
Your books and my books.
Yeah. In fact... the lady that runs the Big Eddie, the Chewonky place there, bought one of my books, Bob, when she was down in Bangor in the middle of the week and asked me to sign it for her.
Well, there you are.
And I was I hadn't sold a book for quite a time, so it was nice to sell a book.
You did sell one. That's wonderful.
I did sell one, yeah. Yeah. All right. We digress. And, again, General Appliance and Brewer, the place to go for all of your appliance needs. Right, Davin?
Uh-huh.
Isn't that right, Davin?
Yep.
Do you buy appliances there?
Hey, Paul, if Paul asks you anything, always say yes.
Just remember, you're on the radio. Nobody can see you. So when you nod that, nobody, you got to talk, okay?
I know.
Good job. Good job. All right, let's get back to our guest. Did we have a caller standing by?
We do have a caller.
Okay, good evening, caller. You're on Maine Outdoors with deer biologist Nathan Bieber.
Hey, how's it going?
Good. How are you tonight?
Good, good, good. Hey, I just had a question. Has the state ever considered maybe doing, as far as the NAD deer permit goes, you know, you're allowed, you know, you shoot a doe before you can harvest a buck. Would that help the population at all?
Are you talking like earn a buck?
Yeah.
Yeah, we're kind of in a cool spot, actually. I came in a really cool spot where we're starting the new big game planning process, and we've just kind of finished that up. And so we're in a point where we're considering, you know, nothing's off the table. We're looking at reevaluating the management system from the bottom up, and we're having all sorts of different discussions on what kind of permits might be good going forward, and whether or not what we're doing currently makes sense. So really nothing's off the table right now.
Yeah, because I was just thinking, it's like me, I draw a doe tag pretty much every year. I'm down in the mid-coast, so they're pretty plentiful down here, and, you know, I won't shoot a doe usually. You know, I'll take a buck first, so I'm just wondering if that would help, you know.
Mm-hmm. I couldn't agree with you more. In fact, there's nothing I would be more enthusiastic about than this recommendation. And you call it, I never heard the term, Nathan. It's called earn a buck?
Elsewhere, I think it's generally called earn a buck, where you're required to harvest an antlerless deer before you get a buck tag.
Why isn't that a great idea, particularly in some of these districts where you're trying to alter the sex ratio?
Yeah, it could be effective in areas where you really want to push doe harvest. And a lot of people in Maine, I've noticed, are really hesitant to harvest a doe. They really want that buck. It's unlike a lot of the Midwest, where there's more of a brown is down sort of attitude.
Yeah.
So it's certainly something that would be worth considering, and it's definitely not off the table.
You can't just snap your fingers and get that done for us tonight?
Unfortunately, I can't, Paul.
Okay.
I'm finding that nothing quite works that way.
All right. Well, take it from an old deer hunter who's been doing this for years in Maine. This is a good idea, Nathan. I don't say that very often. Do I, Bob?
Absolutely. And
it's
you
a
don't,
good idea.
Yes. Yes or no? Oh, no one yes.
So anyway, we'll be watching closely on that, Nathan. That's a good idea.
Noted.
I think you guys ought to consider that. I'm going to get on the advisory council, push them on that. Great idea.
There you go, Paul.
Okay, thanks for the call. Good points. Good evening, caller number three or four or five.
Four, number four.
Number four. You're on here with dear man Nathan Bieber. Go ahead.
Hello?
Hello?
Yeah, go ahead, caller.
Yes, I had a question. I live in Zone 17, and the deer herd right around my area is really hurting. It's not the deer here that used to be here. And my daughter, I homeschooled her for a few years, and we used to start out like 8 o'clock at night, spotlight, and we go around the block, and we'd see a couple hundred deer. And now, you're lucky to see 60 deer around the block. And, I mean, we used to see 60 deer in one field. And I noticed that some of the deer in this area have collars on them. We've seen, not a lot, but probably 5 different deer with collars on them.
Yep.
Is it the feed's not here? I think it's the coyotes myself. I believe it's really coyotes is the issue in here. We have Mainstream down the road, and that's a big deer yard, and the number of deer ain't there either like there was. I'm an outdoors person. I'm out in the woods all the time, all winter long. And the deer in this area right here is not here.
Hey, with all due respect, caller, I'm looking at the numbers here, and in Wildlife Management District 17, where you are, they're issuing 10,000 doe permits. So there must be some deer down there.
Oh, there is deer here, but nothing like there used to be. Not even close. And within a 5-mile area of my house, there's not the deer here. That was here when I moved here in 2000. I mean, there was, and I had records of my daughter when we homeschooled her and did different, you know, we'd go out different hours of night and write down how many deer we saw, and we don't even begin to see the deer that we have. I don't know the reason why, but I think right in this particular neighborhood, I think the coyotes are a big problem.
Yeah, I can't speak to your specific neighborhood. Deer are a pretty patchily distributed resource, and we manage it at the district level, so there may be parts of districts where expectations are going to change over time because there are more deer in parts of a district than other. But in District 17 in general, buck harvest is increasing every year, but we're still falling short on doe quotas, so we're trying to boost our doe harvest. But I can't speak to your neighborhood. There's still a lot of deer out there in District 17, and yep.
Okay.
All right,
and be careful of that spotting deer. You know, I think that's a little illegal in some areas, so be careful. We won't give your address to the local game warden, but we appreciate your call. Thank you, sir. We lost him, right?
If I could touch briefly on the collars he mentioned.
Yeah, go ahead.
He's curious about that. We have been collaring deer in that area for the last 3 or 4 years as part of our ongoing winter severity and winter mortality study for deer, so... In areas of District 17, don't be too shocked if you see a couple deer wandering around with collars. I think we've currently got about 40 or 45 on AR.
Yeah, yep. Yeah. And you're getting some good scientific information from the telemetry of the deer?
Yeah, we've got GPS collars on them, and we get 2 locations per day, and we can also investigate cause of death when those animals die. And at the end of the study, we hope to be able to kind of refine our understanding of how winter severity impacts what deer are making it through the winter and what deer are not. So we've got a couple study sites, one in central Maine and then a couple up north as well.
So you probably sit there at your computer and figure out exactly where those deer are at any given moment, right?
I certainly can, yes.
Oh, yeah. That's incredible.
Yeah, I get calls pretty frequently. People see a collared animal in their yard and they want to know the story of it or how many are in their area, and that's not too hard to pull up.
Can I ask you a question, sir?
Sure, Bob.
Did you marry a Maine girl?
I married a California girl.
Oh, I was going to say a Maine girl would keep you here. Yeah, maybe you can answer me this question. I asked this of a lot of deer biologists over the years, and one of them is, what is roughly the count of the deer, or do you bother with this, or do you add it in when the deer kill, about car collisions and poaching and disease, and heard that all together and added them into your deer kill? Do you do that, or do you know what it is roughly?
We do not factor road kills directly into our management decisions. However, when we have the big any deer permit meeting where all the regional folks and myself get together, we will discuss some of these regional trends. And if we're noticing any outliers or aberrant things, we can factor those into our permit allocations for the year. But there's not like a part of our current management system where we say there's X number of road kills, we're going to adjust permits by X amount. There's nothing.
Okay, we have a caller. Let's take it. Good evening, caller. You've got about a minute. Go ahead.
Good evening. Yes, in the 1700s in this country, the deer used to be deep into the woods, and people would go hunt them in the woods. The deer close to the housing is not healthy. We need to push them back out into the woods. It'd be less ticks, too. Just saying, that's all. Thank you very much.
Yeah, I think it's a good point, huh? Do you agree with him?
I can understand the sentiment for sure, but it's an unavoidable problem. There's people, they're going to expand, they're going to build, and whitetails are very adaptable, and they're going to live wherever they possibly can.
Wherever
and a lot
they
of
find.
Time, that's going to put them right in close proximity with people.
Yeah, and of course, deer feeding probably doesn't help that either, right?
That's certainly going to keep them around houses.
Yeah. Okay, I think we are out of time. Nathan, it's been a pleasure to have you here.
Hey, thanks, Paul.
And we hope you stick around a while. Nice to have you here, and we'd like to have you back sometime. And maybe in early fall, talk a little bit again about deer. We never did get to talking about a couple of the issues we wanted
to
discuss.
Didn't even get to touch on my wedding. Come
on. Anyway, nice to have you here, and we'll have you back, I hope.
Thanks, Paul.
Okay.
Appreciate the invite.
You bet. Next week, our guest is going to be marine biologist Nate Gray, who's going to come on our show and talk a little bit about the alewife situation.
That'll be very interesting, yes.
And so Bob and I will see you all next week. Will you be here, Davin? You'll be here.
Yes.
Well, you're invited, man.
Okay. Yay!
All right. We'll see you all next week, right here on
Maine Outdoors.